100% born in the Appalachian Mountains and made in the USA, Timber Ninja Outdoors provides a range of mobile hunting options to accommodate diverse hunting preferences. Whether you prioritize comfort, lightweight design, or versatility, their two-panel and single-panel saddles collection has something for everyone. The Black Belt Nano is the lightest single-panel saddle available on the market, weighing in under a pound. The saddle is designed with the minimalist hunter in mind, focusing on lightweight functionality and breathability. One notable feature is the patent-pending magnetic stick clip system on the side, which allows for convenient transportation of sticks up the tree, as well as a built-in platform holder. The Nano saddle can be folded up to the size of a Nalgene bottle, enabling easy portability. With a four-way stretch material on the back for a comfortable fit, as well as strategically placed padding for hip pinch relief, you can use code EASTMEETSWEST to get free shipping on any Timber Ninja order. If you try it out and don't like it, send it back within 30 days for a full refund. Learn more at TimberNinjaOutdoors.com and sign up for their email newsletter for exclusive discounts and product drops. Maven makes the highest quality optics at half the price of their competitors through their direct-to-consumer business model. The brand new B7 represents the expansion of their compact lineup and is designed to be more compact and portable than their acclaimed B3 Bino. With a smaller objective lens, the binocular takes a significant leap in terms of size reduction. The B7 is available in both an 8x and 10x option, making it their most compact premium binocular yet. If you're looking for something that will fit in your pocket for deer hunting, turkey hunting, or scouting missions, but still want crystal clear optics, check out the new B7 from Maven. All their optics come with a lifetime, no-fault warranty. If you run it over with your truck or your significant other chucks it at your head, they'll repair or replace it. Use code EASTMEETSWEST-GIFT for a free gift on any full-price optics order at mavenbuilt.com. Better Backstrap's mission is to provide the highest quality seasoning for the meat you work so hard for. They wanted to give hunters another choice besides the big box store brands full of fillers and preservatives. Born right here in Pennsylvania, Better Backstrap Seasonings will turn up the taste of your wild game. Right now, you can pick up their sampler gift box, which includes gun season garlic, tall tine taco, and the original seasoning in a custom gift box. You can use the code EASTMEETSWEST for free shipping at betterbackstrap.com. For all of those that want a truck bed cover for work or play, Diamondback makes the top-of-the-line, heavy-duty covers that help you do more with your truck. They're perfect for the truck-owning, avid sportsmen, outdoor enthusiasts, and weekend project warriors. I'm currently using the HD cover that is capable of holding up to 1,600 pounds on the top, and then I have the Yakima Overhaul HD bars on top so I can put my rooftop tent on it. When I'm not using my rooftop tent and able to use the trifold design of the Diamondback, I have the Crossbin 8 in there to organize all of my stuff in the back of my truck bed. Diamondback is made right here in Phillipsburg, Pennsylvania. If you want to check them out, head over to diamondbackcovers.com.
Are you an adventurer looking to take your hunt to the next level? Then you're in the right place. Welcome to East Meets West Hunt with your host, Bo Martonic.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the East Meets West Hunt podcast presented by Spartan Forge. On today's episode, I am joined by the man, Johnny Stewart. Johnny thinks outside the box when it comes to hunting mature bucks and has successfully done so all over the U.S. from the mountains to farm country. We discussed the mountain buck scouting camp, scouting differently in pressured areas, reading deer sign based on the area, and finding a mature buck safe zone. So this episode is really interesting because it's not your typical scouting tactics or things that we talk about a lot. You know, Johnny really opens things up and he thinks just so differently about deer than anyone I've ever met. And that's why I love spending time around him because I learned so much. And he's particularly been dealing with a lot of hunting pressure in some different areas that he's been in Pennsylvania. And instead of getting discouraged and throwing it out the window, he's really figured out how to use that hunting pressure to find a mature buck's safe zone. So I think this is a really good episode. And, you know, Johnny's been hunting for his whole life, and he's in his 40s now and just had a lot of success. And he's still learning like crazy. So I think there's a lot to be learned from this episode, so I hope you enjoy it. On this week's Mountain Buck Monday Story of the Week, we have a story coming out of Pennsylvania from Joshua Jeffers. So Joshua says, on November 6th, it started off bad with daylight savings kicking me in the butt, and I woke up late, but rushed out and climbed into my stand. I heard what sounded like a buck coming down the ridge to the bottom where I was. Before I could do anything, the buck was walking right to me with my bow on the ground. All I could do was sit and watch. He eventually got wind of me and ran off. Midday, I moved to the other side of the clear cut I was hunting off of. I got set up along a clear cut where these does were coming out of this bottom to feed on acorns, and I was on the trail that was 40 yards from the edge of the clear cut in the thick where these bucks were cutting all these doe trails to scent check them before they go out to feed. With only 5 minutes till closing, I did a quick grunt and snort wheeze. 2 minutes go by, and I hear something coming from my west. I see it was a buck. He took his time to come in and came to 16 yards with a perfect broadside shot. I pulled back, took my time, settled the pin, and let it fly with it double lunging him right behind the shoulder, and only went 80 yards. It was a dream come true. It was my first public land buck, my first big woods buck. Thank you for all the podcasts you do. I listen to all of them and always look forward to hearing more about how I can better myself as a bow hunter in the big woods. Thank you again. Keep up the good work. Well, I'll have to say, Joshua, you should keep up the good work as well. I mean, that is awesome to be able to get your first bow kill, your first big woods buck. And I mean, the setup sounded dynamite. I was picturing it and visualizing it in my head. And, you know, for hunting November, that sounds just about right. So congratulations on that. And thank you for listening to the podcast. If you have a story you want to send in, send me an email, bo@eastmeetswesthunt.com. And just a, you know, a short paragraph or two, some pictures of a successful hunt that you had in the big woods, the mountains, and I'd love to be able to share it on here. So thank you for sending those in. So on this episode, like I said, we have Johnny Stewart coming on and talking about deer scouting. But in Pennsylvania, we have our turkey season opening this weekend. So I just wanted to wish anyone that is in Pennsylvania or any of the other states that are opening this weekend good luck, and be safe out there. A lot of people will be hitting the woods, and I'm pretty excited about it, to be honest. I haven't been too fired up about turkey hunting in a few years now, but I'm kind of getting excited. The turkey population looks good in my areas based off of the last, I'd say, I've seen more turkeys scouting in the last couple months than I had in any other spring for the last probably, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years, maybe even longer. So really exciting. So I'm looking forward to getting out there in the woods and getting after it. You will hear on this episode where Johnny brought up about doing some scouting consulting and wanting to help people. So reach out to Johnny. You'll hear more about it in the episode. But if you want any help and some guidance there, I'll tell you one thing, it'll be definitely worth it. I've done some consulting with some guys on the side. I haven't advertised it or done anything there because I have just had a lot on my plate. But it's been fun to be able to do that and work through it with people and seeing them. A couple of the guys that I worked with had came to the scouting camp last weekend, and it was pretty cool. So definitely reach out to Johnny or if you're interested in talking with me there too. Feel free to reach out via email, and we'll evaluate to see the situation and see if it's right for you. But with that being said, I hope you enjoy this episode with Johnny Stewart. Johnny Stewart, welcome back to the podcast. Got yourself a dozer, a big truck over there.
Yeah, since I got dozers.
Oh yeah, I mean it fits your lifestyle pretty good.
I actually got a dozer just like that.
Really?
Yeah.
What kind is it?
He says D13 on it. It's a cat, actually D6, but maybe he couldn't put that on there.
Yeah.
But I got one just like that. No, I don't push hops too often.
You know, you're not pushing hops.
I push dirt.
Oh, man. So we are We're just finishing up the Mountain Buck Scouting Camp here, the second annual now, which is wild to say. And Kip Folks, who is the founder of Big Truck at his property here in northern Pennsylvania, where we held the camp at. And super thankful that he allowed me to use this place again, or for us to use this place again and be able to do this, because it was pretty incredible. Such different weather than we had last year.
Yeah, last year was snowing. This year, what, 75?
Yeah.
Green. Yeah, really stark contrast than last year. I like the cooler weather.
Yeah.
It was, you know, hiking weather last year, but you would think this time of year you're going to have some good weather, but at least it wasn't raining, huh? It called for some rain, and we lucked out of that, huh?
Yeah, no, we definitely lucked out. I mean, it showed 30% chance of thunderstorms all day on Saturday. We never got a drop the whole time, which was really lucky. Last year we had snow, 4 inches of snow, I think we got overnight and cold weather. And this time, you know, it was a good 40 some degrees warmer, which is wild to think about, but such a good time, no matter what, like that we had here. We were able to have some outdoor fires and everything. Like it just made it pretty enjoyable.
Yeah. It was nice having some of the guys stay with us. Unlike last year, you know, that was really cool to, you know, talk hunting and hear stuff from them. And it was, I mean, just overall, all the people that attended were great guys, you know, and it was easy to talk to them. It was about hunting and stuff like that. And like you said, nobody was off or arrogant. Like it was a good time, you know?
Yeah, no, so last year, for anyone that doesn't know, last year, it was the first year I did it, and we had it where people came in, and it was a 1.5 day workshop, essentially, that we had, and this year changed it up a little bit where we went full 2 days, because we were kind of running out of time last year, which we ended up, who could have used more time again this year too. It's so hard to condense all this in 2 days, but we added the option for what I just called the VIP membership slot. It was very limited. Only had a handful of people that stayed here, got to stay at this lodge with us and get to have fully cooked meals from Gunnar Emberg, otherwise known as a Hungry Huntsman, who he absolutely crushed.
He kills it.
Breakfast, lunch, dinner, every single night.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a really great cook. Everything is wonderful.
Yeah. No, it was so good. And the whole idea, like, behind, and I think you're actually the one that brought up the idea last year about having some people stay with us, is like to try to like really bring that deer camp vibe that we get to have and bring it to people that either don't get to have that opportunity, or maybe just want to have some different people hang out with us and for whatever reason. But, you know, me, you, my dad, Mason Martonic, my cousin.
Yeah.
I told him 10 minutes before we started that he was going to be a presenter this year.
Yeah.
Because I know Mason gets nervous.
Yeah.
And I know that he would still do it if he didn't. So that was nice to have him involved. Ryan Glitzky, otherwise known as Moose. So he went from being an attendee last year to coming in and teaching a class this year, which was really cool. And Greg Litzinger, bow hunting fiend, he was back again. And Kenny Kane on the forestry side. So like it was a good group. Like when, you know, when I asked all of you guys, it kind of came down to everyone's got their strong suit and we all hunt a little differently. And I wanted that different perspective. So when people that are here and asking questions or getting that, once we go out in the field and see inside, it's like they know that it's not just one way to hunt deer. Everyone's thinking of things differently and we're learning from each other. And I think that's really helpful.
Yeah. I think that is a huge thing, is to have different people's perspective. And, cause if you were just the only guy up there talking, it would be more of just how you see it and how you hunt. And some people would take that as a matter of fact, this is how it's done, which, you have success doing things your way. When you bring other personalities in and people, it's a different perspective. And I think, like, when these people, like, when a question's asked, I think people are thinking a scenario that they have in their hunting spot. If they ask a general question, and then I'm thinking the area I hunt, how I would answer it. And then you're thinking on an area that you would hunt. So it's nice to see different ways, like answering it differently, because you're thinking of a different kind of scenario. It's not like we're like everybody's hunting this property and knows this piece and we're asking questions about this. It's like they have their own image in their head of their area that they're hunting and they're wanting to question. And there are maybe I would answer it wrong because the situation I'm thinking of doesn't pertain to them, to where you might be a better answer to for them.
Yep.
It might help, or they might have three things to take and apply in their situation, you know. But there's just so many. No two pieces of land are exact. There's similarities, but there's big differences in, you know, habitat, population, and go on and on about it, you know.
Yeah. So. No, and what was cool too this year, one thing that had changed, and based off of feedback from last year, was going and we pre-scouted the areas. So me and my dad came in and pre-scouted, and we wanted two completely different areas to be able to look at. So one was a piece of kind of mountain ground with some good terrain features, some open wood, some laurel, some oak, and that kind of stuff mixed in. And then the other area had a giant clear cut that had been cut probably about 3 years ago, had some hemlock, some more cherry, some other stuff, not as much oak, and some mountain laurel mixed in. And just seeing how the deer use some of these different terrain features and vegetation types differently, mm-hmm. and understanding that, so that was pretty cool to be able to do that. And then we split them up into groups, you know, so like me and you and Moose and Kenny led one group, and then my dad, Mason, and Greg led another group
and
there.
Flip-flopped, yeah.
And then the people got to flip-flop between the two groups and get to see all of our different perspectives and get to see the different locations. And it always, like, the way we structure it is there's a classroom portion in the morning, kind of going through some mm-hmm. of the basics of particular situations. And then we just kind of almost treat it like a podcast like this, where we're going back and forth and thinking of scenarios and giving options and allow, you know, giving the opportunity to anyone that's there to ask questions based on their situations and get, you know, feedback. And I felt like this class was super engaged, asking a lot of questions, being able to do that. And it's funny, we were talking about it afterwards. We were having kind of like I don't know how to want to call it, but a session in the kitchen afterwards of just kind of a recap.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about what went well, you know, what could be improved. And there's always things to improve. We had a bunch of things that we think we can do better. But it came down to there has not, in the 2 years of doing this, there has not been one person that we're like, oh, we're glad they're gone. Mm-hmm. Like, everybody's like, people would be welcome to have in our camp.
In your own hunting camp, yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I think when we get out in the field, a lot more guys, I think some people in a classroom situation are afraid to actually ask questions to some degree, or might think it's dumb. But I think once we got out in the field or in breaks, they come up to one of us and pick our brain, which is good, because I know a lot of them probably had questions, but they just didn't want to ask. They'd rather just like pull you aside. And then how I talked about the question they would ask in a classroom in their situation, then once we go out in the field, then we are actually all in the same situation, you know, and then they can ask questions and based on what we're seeing, you know, not just in a classroom. And a lot of guys would, you know, when we get out in the field, okay, how would you hunt this and that? And I think that was a big help to people. I think the biggest thing I got asked a lot was how do you approach it? What's your entrance, exit? You know, I feel like that was a really concern, a big concern for a lot of these guys. Once you find a situation, how do you get in? So I think I helped a few guys out with that, and
yeah. This is so, Kurt, my brother Kurt was here helping out and tagging along with both groups, and he said that the top questions that he heard that came to all of us on both sides were, once we found specific sign, it was, what do you look for next? That was a big question. Would you set up a camera and how? Would you hunt this and how, which goes to the point that you said there. How do you know where to stop? That was a big one. Like, when do you know, like, when you're finding fresh sign and being able to do that? And then access. Those were the top, like, five things that seemed to come up. And, you know, there's not really one way to answer any of that. And I think that was important for them to be able to see. And, you know, even for myself, is like, my eyes were opened up so much to, again, like, I've spent a lot of time in the woods with you, but yet every time we spend time together, I learn more or see how you look at something a little differently, and something that I'm like, man, I might put some time into this spot. There was times you're like, no, I wouldn't waste my time here. I would keep going. And it was just like, it was interesting. And then you'd be like, and this is why, and this is why. And like, I think, you know, kind of looking at the question of like, what do you do next when you find hot sign? Like, what are things that go through your head when you find, say you find a nice scrape? What are like the things that you think about?
You find a nice scrape, hopefully have a camera to get it on there immediately, to start getting some pictures or whatever. I think a high percentage of these scrapes are hit at night. Not always, depending on, I guess, location, you know, if it's like where we checked out one near the road, me and you, I wasn't getting a lot of mature deer there because it was by the road. So in that situation, I'm like, where is he? Because I figure he's going to come here at night. Then I always start thinking, which way is he going to come? Where's he coming from? But knowing your area enough can help you. Where is the cover? Where is the food? You just put the pieces of the puzzle together to help him. Where are the does bedding, you know? But also, like, when you see a scrape, is this a scrape that I feel like a mature deer is going to hit? Like I said, if it was that one by the road, I felt that after I ran a camera, just immature deer, because it was cars. It just, in that situation, and I don't want to contradict myself, because there are times when these bucks live by the road, you know?
Yeah. But you wouldn't have known that, and you kind of thought that they might have, but then running a camera
told me it was more immature deer.
And the thing you said about location, like that is a critical component. I think all of us were very aligned with that. Like, when we found, say we go up and we found, say, for example, the point we were going up today and yesterday. So we'd found a really heavy trail crossing in the bottom, which is something that I'll do a lot, is when I find some heavy trail crossings going from point to point, that makes me like want to walk up and check that out. You know, like, sign in the bottom show up so much more than on top. It's, you know, it's a little bit softer down there. You can see sign a little better. You can see trails. And so we went up on this point and we started getting into some scrapes about a third of the way up. You know, there was a pretty good looking scrape there. And I think both you and I said we'd probably throw a camera at it. But the first thing we thought of was, we looked around and looked at the area. Okay, does a buck feel safe here? You know, that's one thing you think about, like, when you're thinking of daylight activity and scrapes. Like, what? It was pretty open woods, you know.
And
like,
another thing that's really important is, can I hunt this scrape? Is this a situation that I can set up on and hunt? Because the majority of the deer are going to come in with the wind in their favor, you know. So that's a big thing. Is there something, is there like a, is it like on a point? Do you think he's more or less coming like to where your wind, you can just have the wind a little bit in your favor to catch him maybe coming like this and the wind's going like that, you know what I mean? But there are some situations where scrapes, you're just like, man, I don't think I can hunt this because I just think he's going to smell me, you know, because they're on alert. I think sometimes I'm not crazy about scrapes just because, man, they're on alert when they're coming in. They're going to smell, not so much you, but what other animals hit that, the deer hit that, and they're going to be using their nose right off the bat when they come into that scrape. So maybe you have to set up a little ways away. So that's, is it something, is it a scrape that I can hunt? I guess, you know, that's a big question to ask yourself.
Yeah, no, definitely. But you know, like, again, at that example, you know, we'd found this big licking branch, which is something I always look for to determine that, you know, a mature buck is working this scrape. Big spot on the ground that was pawed out. And it was actually even looked like it was hit somewhat recently. But if you just look at the rest of the stuff that we'd found at that point, not much sign other than the trail coming up the hill, not much other buck sign there. But then all of a sudden we started finding, you know, some decent sized saplings that were snapped in half. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, there's probably a mature buck in here. But when you looked at it, it was kind of open. The looked like the primary food in this particular situation there at this place that we were at, there was a food plot in the bottom, but if you look at that from a scenario in public, that could either be, sometimes there's a lot of those bottoms that are grassy that they're coming down to at night and they're feeding in some of those creek bottom spots, or private ag fields that are down at the bottom. They're bedding up high and coming down to it. So we're like, this is a travel area, probably not a spot we're going to hunt. We're going to keep going. We're going to keep pushing. As we started moving up the hill, it started getting a little better, some thicker cover, some green briar, some, there was some
laurel. We got to the laurel.
Yeah. We got up, but this was a really cool part of it. We got up, there was like a knob or a hill that was on top, and then we were coming up the point and there were just trails coming around on both sides, and right where that met, that's a good terrain feature, but it still wasn't great yet. And then yesterday we had missed it, but today we spotted this rub that was just kind of off on this like off trail. It wasn't the main trail. So we walked over and checked that out, and Moose is like, oh, this is a little faint trail. It's coming around. And based off a bed we had found kind of inside that laurel a little bit that looked like it might have been a buck bed yesterday, he's like, that'd be perfect for that buck to J-hook up and head up towards that bed. And you know, yesterday we were like, the sign's not really looking that great. And what we were kind of looking at for a potential setup completely changed when we went in there again and just found another piece to the puzzle. And I think that, like, when you're looking at that type of situation, I feel like the attendees that were here and the guys that were here started to see that, like, not everything, no matter how much we've scouted, not everything's clear to us the first time we go in. We're just going through, you know, Moose was big on marking every piece of sign you find in Spartan Forge, marking that sign. And then after you have all the sign marked, you start seeing trends and travel routes. And then it might take the second time going in or the third time to really kind of get a better picture for it.
Yeah, and the second day up, I was feeling better about where we were with the laurel. And I feel like you mentioned, and it stuck with me, which is true, like, sign is just relative to where you're at, like how much sign you see. Like initially when I went up there, I'm like, there's not much sign here. But what does that mean? You know, if you don't have something, like I'm thinking of some of the areas that have maybe have more sign. But once we were in the laurel and we were around, I was like, it ain't, there's some decent sign here. Like it went from there's not a lot here to it's decent. Because I kept going, we kept scouting and knowing more. And like after you talked about this other hill not having as much sign and open, and I said, well, this might be, is looking better to me just after it went from not so great to this is better, because that might be the best that you're going to find, you know. And that's, you only know that by putting, like you said, a few trips in or encompassing larger areas. It might be like, wow, this is the best spot to hunt. It might go from like, yeah, because that first trip, I'm like, I wasn't excited, you know, I wasn't seen. And then I said, okay. And then once we got to that, after the laurel, we got to a saddle where you had to scrape. And then leaving that, we found some faint scrapes and then hit, it was a pretty hardcore trail. It felt like there was kind of a steep hill coming up, and then there's just like a transition of slope to where it was kind of steep, and then it transitioned to a lesser slope, and there was a top there, and it was definitely right at that transition, the deer were traveling along there, like on a topo line right there, and probably heading to that saddle, a nice, more or less a funnel, but there was I felt good, like I put myself in a deer's situation where there were some grapevines, there was a little bit of thick stuff, the ground was uneven, and I just feel like I could catch him sneaking through there. And then it made, after seeing that, it made that scrape. And then the cover, the laurel looked better because I'm starting to put the pieces of the puzzle together. And once you find more, you can, and I'm always hesitant when I go into a situation like I did yesterday to start giving advice and saying this, which I don't know. I'm not ready to give you an answer on how I would hunt or what it's, you know, I don't want people to say, John said to do this. And then after I put the time in, it's like, no, like initially I wasn't too excited about it. Yeah, maybe. And I always throw maybe in there because I don't know enough to say, this is what I would do. I want to see more. And I can kind of give for an instance, like when guys would talk to me, I'm like,
The Spartan Forge app utilizes years of military background and machine learning to pull from millions of data points to accurately predict deer movement with over 30 years of GPS collar data, trail camera data, academic, and state research. The app is a complete tool for planning your hunt with incredible aerial imagery, mapping, journaling, and some of the most accurate and detailed weather data. The latest update is huge. One feature that I'm using a lot during the rut is LiDAR. LiDAR basically removes the trees from the landscape and allows you to see every nook and cranny, logging road, boulder, etc., with some areas having 1 meter data, which just means that you can see any deviation in the land as small as 3 feet. During the rut, I will look for logging trails that intersect with key terrain features such as ditches or draws to funnel deer movement. Use the code EASTMEETSWEST to save 20%. And if you're still on the fence, give the 14-day free trial a chance at SpartanForge.ai. CVA has been America's number one selling muzzleloader brand for over a decade. Hunting with a muzzleloader opens up a ton of hunting opportunities across the U.S., and I've been using the Acura series. But they don't only make badass muzzleloaders. Their line of centerfire rifles are great quality and not terrible on the wallet. The Cascade Short Barrel is ideal for tight quarters, deer drives, and for quick shots in the big woods. You can check out their line of muzzleloaders, rifles, and accessories for every season and every range at bpioutdoors.com/CVA. If you use the code EASTMEETSWEST10, you'll get 10% off of all CVA products, which includes rifles, muzzleloaders, and accessories.
Well, if you know this deer, if you would know this laurel is where does are, and if you knew the opposite side was maybe thick and he's laying on that point, then yes, I would be here. I was like adding to what we saw, like adding another point of interest to where he was going from the, you know, from maybe that point to here. But just going up there and seeing that, I was kind of lost a little bit on how to answer some questions. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, and it takes, like I said, those pieces of the puzzle. Like, I felt like by the end of today, we felt way better about the situation and had ideas in our head of what made sense versus the first time you look at it. And as you're going up, you don't know what's good until you see most of it. And what you said was really important about deer sign being relative, like, to your areas. Like, you know, I struggle with this a lot too. And you were saying that you were today too, was like, when you're in a different area, it takes a while and seeing a bunch of the property to understand what good deer sign mm-hmm. looks like in your area, because the areas that you're used to hunting might have more deer sign or less deer sign. So you might get, say you're in an area that has less deer sign, you go to an area that has more, you think everything looks good.
Yeah.
And that's not good either.
Yeah.
You know, cause it's more difficult to be able to figure that out. But one thing that really stuck with me from scouting this place and others, and Greg Litzinger is huge on this, is finding sign on specific topography. You know, like as far as on a topo line at a certain elevation, you're starting to figure out travel routes of some of these bucks mm-hmm. based on the sign that they're leaving. And I think we found some of that today, where we first found that one rub up towards the edge of that laurel, and then where the travel was through the laurel that came out the same elevation as this giant community scrape that was in the middle of a saddle.
Mm-hmm.
And that scrape, so put that scenario on public land, and there's probably going to be a ladder stand in that saddle.
Yeah, you're right.
Because everyone knows about saddles. They're great, but at the same time, there's always pressure there. So how do you work off that saddle, still paying attention to it? And that's where, like, following that topography line out and finding some of these spots that are, you know, have a little more cover, like the mountain laurel and stuff, where you can set up, you know, there's not really a defined distance. It could be 150 yards. It could be 500 yards away, but that still plays off of that same, you know, type of location. And I think, you know, we were finding a lot of that.
Yeah, definitely. That elevation, once we saw that, I'd say the saddle and then a trail even, and then that elevation at the laurel thicket made that elevation look better. The laurel thicket goes up probably 100 feet. You know, where do I hunt in here? Because a deer could potentially be anywhere in that laurel thicket, but then once you start picking up them, like when Moose found him, you know, that trail going in, I'm like, okay, this is, I'd probably hang down about this elevation, you know, or work my way in, whether you start high, you know, if the thermals are coming up, and just work your way down to that area. But yeah, it made more sense to be down lower, you know, but it's just time hiking. And like Moose said, find them little clues. There's, and I always talk about, like, something's happening here. There's clues everywhere, you know, you just got to figure it out.
Yeah. And making a lot of assumptions based off of what you're seeing, but there's such little sign that we are picking up on that I think is, it's easy to walk past. Like, so we found a good bed at one point towards the bottom of the laurel, and it was kind of difficult to tell if it was a buck bed or a doe bed. I mean, it was a good size. There was some hair in it, and it was, but it was wore down pretty good, and there was one bed. And to me, that was like, there wasn't any rubs right there, but on that same elevation line on one of the exit trails, there was a scrape about 80 yards away. There was some rubs there. And then you started looking around, and there was some bushes that were coming through the laurel that were just like, had tine marks on them that weren't really hit as a rub, but kind of, you know, ticked up a little
bit. Yeah.
And it made you think, like, okay, now I'm going to draw a conclusion and say that is a spot that buck could be bedded in this location. And that's not a fact. That's just a conclusion we came to based off of the other sign that we were finding there. And that's where you, like, picking up on those little things. And Mason talked a lot about tracks. Mason uses tracks a lot for confirming stuff as far as where a buck is going to move through, you know, just as much as trail camera knowledge or anything else. And it's like, there's not one little thing to look at. It's finding all these pieces. And sometimes it's just slowing down and taking your time going through these places.
Yeah, definitely. I'm always, and I notice myself, I'm always looking like this, like eyes up, down, because like, there's so much to see and take in. And like we were talking about that elevation line, I feel like these bucks, after tracking enough deer in some rugged areas like we were today, was maybe, what, 300 to 400 from bottom to top. You're thinking elevation change, Bo? I didn't really look at the map.
I think it was 500 to 600.
Was it that much?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a fairly large mountain, we would call them. And I find there is that sweet spot that them bucks like to be in. And after following deer in this type of terrain, in the snow, it's kind of like they're using that there's that sweet spot. They might go up a little bit and down, but it's just kind of like this, you know, and use that topo line, but just plus or minus a little bit, they kind of feel comfortable in, you know, just as a general rule of thumb. Now you can't say, oh, Johnny said this, you know, like, maybe the tops, that flat got a ton of acorns and maybe he'll be up there, but then that's another, we didn't go to the top to see, you know,
Moose did that first day. He took that little group up there.
Yeah.
We were standing there looking at a spot that last year when we scouted this area, there was a big scrape there, and it was a pretty good little trail. It went in the laurel, a little tiny bench, and you can only really see it when you have slope angle turned on and 10-foot contours on your map, because it was such a small little thing, but it was a trail. And I didn't even have the words, this is a good exit trail, out of my mouth.
Yeah.
And they kicked up some deer off the top of the hill. And we don't know if it was a buck that, you know, lost its antlers or a big doe, but she came running out and almost ran over. Our group came flying out right on that exit trail. It was like, okay, that's an escape route too for them. Like, you kind of, we learned that. Yeah. And that gave us a little bit of clarity on that spot too, and being able to see that. But it's like, you know, it takes just walking some of these different elevations. And my dad said it pretty good. He was like, if you have like a day to scout something, you know, you're going to miss stuff. There's highlights that you can do and you can get in a good place. Guys that are short on time, you can do well in one day, but to really know an area, you got to walk it all. When you find a good spot, it's time to like grid the different elevation levels and really understand how they're using that property.
And for like a lot of people, even like me that don't live near where they're hunting, scout, no, and I always talk about knowing, know more, keep knowing. I don't care if I'm, and I told a lot of these guys, a lot of guys are scared to get in and thoroughly go through and check it. I was like, I'd rather know that's a good area and bump a deer out of it than to sit here and not get into that situation that I would want to hunt. Just know as much as you can, go through it. That's really important, you know, if you're going out for 2 or 3 days hunting, maybe, and I've talked about times where I would go to a piece of land that, and just hike, go through it. And especially if there's a lot of hunters, they're going to usually tend to use the same stands and stuff like that. Just speed hike through it and take up. And I've done it even like in the gray light areas in the evening when deer are moving, and I'll see where guys or stands are, no deer sign. And then boom, I bumped the doe here, and it's just like, okay, these deer, you, and I always say that you walking and hiking doesn't put them on edge as much as when you're a hunter and you're acting like a predator by sitting up in your stand. They can't see you. You're hidden. I mean, that to me, that's like bad juju. Like, I'd rather hike and make noise and walk and bump deer that way, because they're a little calmer when they run off and listen to you go off, and then they just come back, you know. So that's all I always say is get in there and hike it and make some noise and scout. And then hunting can be that if you tip them off in a hunting situation, like I talked about where this last year I got up in my stand before light, and I heard a deer running, a buck chasing a doe below me, and I hit my grunt call. Just one time I blew on it, and it was an hour before daylight, and the ground was wet, so here this buck end up coming up the hill and standing 40 yards from me. I'm sitting in my stand still an hour of light before light, and then I got up and just turned around, and my safety belt just made a noise on my hood, and it was a foreign noise, and he already had that spot pegged because I grunted. He blew and he run down that hill like that's – he did not like that. Like that was way worse than if I just – hiked in there and bumped him, he'd run and do a circle. I feel like I could hunt that area again. But what I did really threw me off, and I'm like, I really effed this spot up. I need to reevaluate. Like, I wouldn't even hunt there. I actually gave it a couple days, and I moved because I think he was really in tune to what I was. It was on public land, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
So know what you, like, and know as much as you can.
Yeah, and another thing you brought up about walking and not worrying as much about, you know, really destroying an area, you know, per se. And people do worry about that. And I saw that through a lot of the questions that came up. They're worried about going a little further and bumping deer. You're on public land. There's probably people that are already walking through those places. I mean, I was very cautious at times. Like, I remember I'd be waiting for the perfect scenario all the time to go in and do this. And in reality, then I'd like check my cameras, and I got guys with bird dogs in front of it. And there's people walking through the woods a lot.
Yeah, so these mature deer are already onto the game. They know it. They know it. Yeah. There's humans out there, and they live with humans in these public lands, not so much on like private land. Guys stay out and stuff like that, but these deer are surviving, living with humans. People are afraid to go in and walk, or afraid of leaving scent. I mean, and then I talked earlier in the class about, you don't know exactly when you got a lot of flat area, no topo, and not much concentration of food. You don't know how these deer navigate. Like, they just roam. How you know you're going to say, I don't want to walk where he can catch my scent from my boots or my trail in and out. I really don't know, you know, in these big public lands, mountains, like I don't know everything. And I what I'm saying is I don't know exactly where he's going to walk. You know what I mean? You know, maybe when you get like soon you get around a scrape, wear your gloves, rubber boots and stuff like that, because he's, you know, he's going to come to that spot. So try to not leave as much scent there. But in general, just do your best with have a pair of shoes that you wear in the field a lot, and there doesn't have a new smell to them. Maybe rubber boots. And there's times when I just cake mud on them when I have the chance and let it sit on there. And I don't think we talked much. I mean, it is a scouting camp, so I guess scent control is a big thing for me. I don't know. We should have touched on that a little bit, because I know some people don't worry about it. Some people are fanatics about it. And I think it's an important thing to keep your scent to a minimum. Wash your clothes, wash your body. When you're going out hunting, you know, I feel like you're putting off scent, but if you can just minimize the amount of scent that's leaving your body, that can help. Where we should have maybe touched a little bit more on that as far as when you get into a hunting situation. It's a scouting camp, so I mean, you said we already did 2 days, and
you got to be focused. Like it's hard. Like there's definitely so much, you know, meat left on the bone as far as like what we could have covered, but you can only retain so much information. So like, you know, in a short amount of time, I think Kurt was saying like in something like this, someone is probably only retaining 10 to 15% of what they heard during that. So I feel like staying focused on the topic of scouting and once we get in the field, it comes hand in hand as far as how we're going to set up and doing that. But like actual deer tactics and strategy wasn't as much of,
that's a whole nother camp.
That's a whole nother camp. Yeah. That's a hunt. You know what I mean? Cause you could have another 2 days just on that.
I mean,
and go into the scent control. And like I've never been I shouldn't say never have been, but in the last 5 to 6 years, I haven't been big on scent control or taking precautions with that. And now I can 100% do better. And there was one thing that you guys both said that I thought that I should do better is like I can't wear rubber boots really, because I just like, I don't know, my ankles support, and sometimes it's deep country, and also my feet sweat so bad. All those things, like, so what can I do to still minimize it even though I can't go to that level? And it's maybe just my boots and my leather boots that I'm wearing, just only use those for hunting. Or like Moose was saying, he keeps them, you know, in his truck.
He takes them off when he gets to his vehicle.
Yeah, he takes them off when he gets to his vehicle, and he wears a different set, you know, when he's walking and, you know.
And that's a great, definitely, like if you got floor mats and your armor all on them and you're sitting in there and you're hunting, then you're going out, it's like you got to think about all that stuff. Now, I have an excavation business. I'm out in the dirt all day, and my floor is covered in dirt, so it's actually just like, I'm just wearing, you know what I mean? It's kind of like... so think about all that stuff, you know,
and the rubber glove thing too, with the licking branch. I've never done that.
Yeah, me either.
And, but that was something I was like, that could be that 100% is not going to hurt you. It only has the potential to help you. And I thought that was a good point that Moose brought up with it. Cause I just go up and I grab the branch and I break it off. And then I spray it down with forehead gland scent. And do bucks still hit them? Yeah. But maybe there are bucks that smell me and I'm not even getting pictures of them because I'm doing that. I don't know.
And sometimes I've even told some of these guys, I'll just, if you got mud nearby, I'll go off away from the scrape, move the leaves, cover my hands in mud, and that just to, if I do want to break that branch.
Yeah, I've watched you do that before.
Yeah. To help cover, you know, that scent. And it would almost smell like earth, so it coincides with what he's expecting to smell in that area. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, and but back to like the scouting portion of it, it's like we kept saying it over and over again. It takes years to learn an area, no matter how skilled you are, how much experience that you have. It takes a while to learn intricacies of these specific areas. And the things that we talk about are rules of thumb. And the way I put it, it gets you 70% of the way there. And then 30% is figuring out that specific area and how the deer are using these spots. Like mature bucks are mature bucks no matter where they're at in the country, whether they're in the suburbs where Lee Ellis hunts or they're in the mountains where we hunt. But Now it's like when you're in these locations, understanding how they're, you know, trying to pay attention to their security. What are they using for that? What, and, you know, cover's relative too. That was something else we talked about. You know, when you talk about cover, you hear that all the time. We say that all the time. What does that actually mean? What is cover?
Yeah.
If you're in an area with that is very mature timber, open woods, and you find a spot that has some grape vines
like dead
that
log.
Are over it and, yeah. and a little patch of or dead log or blowdown.
It might be all.
That might be all the cover. That might be the cover you're looking for. You get another area that, you know, you have a giant-sized, you know, eight-year-old clear cut that's thick as can be everywhere. There's different things on what cover yeah. looks like in that potential location versus what you're finding in these other places. And that just takes, again, walking these areas and being able to see it. Now, e-scouting, we spent a lot of time going through e-scouting and terrain features. What that's meant to do is get you in the game, is mm-hmm. to be able to help you do it. But nothing replaces in the field scouting. And now you're saying, okay, say you're trying to go to Ohio and you've never been there before. You don't have time to get out there ahead of time. You have 7 days to hunt. That's why, that's where when I go out in those situations, I'm going to spend 2-3 days scouting, even though that's taken away from hunting time, but I feel like I'll be in the game more than if I were just to go try to sit in a tree for 7 days.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I've lately, as I teach and talk to people, I start using the word like an area I consider a safe zone for mature deer. So that really, there could be a lot of things to make a deer feel safe, a mature deer, whether it's cover or terrain. But to me, a safe zone is where he pretty much can go and live daylight hours that he's not been bumped in his very often 3 to 4, 5 years. And he can kind of let his guard down a little bit. And a lot comes into play, whether, you know, it's a rugged area that he goes to no one goes, or maybe.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
It could be a safe zone near a parking or road that no one really messes with because it is by the road. But to me, when I say that safe zone, it could, you got the tools from like the camp or whatever. You figure out where this mature deer's safe zone is, because it could be a combination of things. But to me, it's an area that he feels comfortable in and doesn't have the hunting pressure, and he can let his guard down. And if it might be a pocket here, it might be half a mile. He got these safe zones that, you know, he can hop around to. And like this year, I'm going to start now, and I try to stay ahead of the game, the hunting game. The more people hunting the public land, the more shed hunters. What's his next move, like to keep surviving? I try to put all these pieces of the puzzle together, just these safe areas that a mature deer, you know, he's 6-8 years old and there's a ton of rifle hunters, and then next year he pops up again, you know. Where is this? It might be hard to find. There might not be a lot of, he might not leave sign in these areas, but just if you start knowing the area where the guys hunt and stuff like that, you could start figuring this could be a safe area. And like this year, I think what I want to do with these areas that I'm finding is I want to hunt when the other hunters are out there, that the first week of November into the second week. Now, this year, I didn't really use that tactic. It's starting. I'm learning myself as I go in the hunting these whitetails. I'm in an area where, like this year, you know, it was a weird year for the rut. It was some warm weather, but I'm hunting the traditional sign, you know, and I'm not seeing all the daylight activity that I want now. And there's still other hunters in the area. Now, I feel like these mature deer, you get into November, they're still staying tight to these safe zones. And I even talked to a couple guys today about how I've seen them hang out in the safe area until about November 10th, 12th, because they're not dumb. You know, they survived a few ruts already. And it's like they'll leave when you get in the rut, they'll be in their safe zone, and then they'll leave 20 minutes before dark. And you got that first 20 minutes, and it's usually a beeline. You know, the guys ask me, is he going into the wind? I said, no, he's so safe that he's just that first 20 minutes, he's doing it with his guard down to some degree because this works. He never sees people here. So I'm going to start hunting. I'm thinking an area in particular that I know where the hunters are. And like I said, when you get into November, guys are flooding the woods, and these mature deer that grew up in these situations and survived with hunters and pressure, it's easy for them. They find these safe areas. And so I want to get in. I might even eliminate cameras to some degree because I know the area enough. I'm thinking about putting cameras out in the summer and getting an inventory, what's left over from last year. I know some of them made it through. I got pictures of them in December, but I'm just like, hey, when these guys, I'm not talking like middle October, still green and up and forth. They could be, their safe zone might be larger because they don't see people that time. And it might be a relative to the time of year. You know, you get in that November and October, you know, their safe zone. And I'm going to use the saddle this year and just get in these safe areas, you know, where I know. And like I said, I try to see what they see. And the more time I put in scouting and being around deer, I see where they don't go from my scouting, my cameras, you know, and then I start to see where they want to be. It might not even have sign, or they might leave their safe area and get out and do their putting their rubs down. And me talking to people and people asking me questions, it helps me learn myself when I give them an answer. And I'm like, oh, light bulbs go off for me too. Because I really start when they ask a question, I want to give them the best answer I can. And I really ask myself, you know, and I'm coming up with things like this. And I even thought about it before I come to the camp. I was at my place and I said, I'm just going to go to these safe areas and take the saddle, get in a tree. And I feel like even these safe areas are going to, you know, and you get into October, and they're still putting a feed bag on. They're eating to some degree. So they're going to be moving. Maybe like you said, if there's a lot of browse, it might be in smaller situations. I mean, smaller areas to where they're going to feed. But if you can get in there, you can catch them, you know. But being out where all the sign is not the ideal place to catch these mature deer. You know what I mean?
What do you mean? When you're talking about their safe areas, what makes you feel like this? Is there any like tendency? Okay. To even give a specific scenario, like the scenario you're thinking of, what makes you think that's their safe area? I know you're saying that, like, okay, you're playing off of human pressure. Really, probably the most part of it is playing off. Yeah. That's the biggest predator.
I don't see people, like, and then people ask me, do you see a lot of cameras? And as things start clicking, no, but I'm starting to gravitate to areas that people aren't in. And like you said, and I always tell people, people asked in the past, as Bo Martin, where's a buck bed where people aren't? Boom. Okay, I need to be where people aren't. You see the stands, you see the cameras, and they're usually, and then these bucks live by association. So if in my area there's a few clear cuts, yeah, the larger population of deer will be there, the majority of deer, but they're going to be the younger age class deer, does and what have you. But then he's going to go in at night, leave sign, and da da da. So it all is appealing and looks good. And I feel like once a buck smells someone in that area, that situation, he associates that. Maybe there's another clear cut a half a mile away. He goes into that area with more caution. you know, because this situation where I start seeing a lot of does and a lot of browse is where I start seeing humans.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, so I'll go down a mile down the street or whatever, and I find this again, I'm already on red alert because this is where humans are, you know, and if you know, rubs and scrapes in it. So they're going to be there at night, you know, because they're going to be cautious. But pretty much where people aren't, you know, but still have what they need, a lot of our areas that we hunt is browsing. Like you said, it could be anywhere, but maybe a little, you know, when the wind or the thermals might also help them throughout the day. But and it could be, I mean, it's vast in the area I hunt, but knowing where they aren't, you know, helps you decide where they are. And it don't always have to be, but this is all relative again, you know, comes down to hunting pressure. And I usually get close to hunters and help that, use that to help me, you know.
You know, I learned something today from one of the attendees in the class that I thought was super helpful. And so when I find hunter sign, like a tree stand or trail camera, I mark it. But one of the guys in the class was saying is he marks that in a specific color. So
yeah,
and he marks every piece of hunter sign that he finds. Where I'm marking stands and cameras, but I'm not really marking, you know, some other things, maybe some glow tacks that are going in, or like trails that they might be using, or there's some other things that can be, and changing it to a different color. So when you look at your map, you know, when you're scouting, you're not just scouting the deer, you're scouting the people. And now you're starting to see, okay, here's a cluster where people are, and you know, here's some deer sign, which, you know, obviously is super important too, but you can start adding more pieces to help build that puzzle, definitely. And maybe even find that safe area that you're talking about, that mystical safe area, because safe areas aren't like a terrain feature. They're not of certain vegetation. It's not something that you can just say, hey, Bo, here's four things that, you know, what would make up a buck safe area, because it comes down to what's going to make them feel secure. Mm-hmm. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
And where is that location? But a lot of that's going to come from, you know, figuring out what the humans are doing, what the pressure is being applied to, their routes in, what they're doing. And, you know, I've learned you pay attention to people for a while as far as that. And that's something that I think that I've paid attention to, but not as much as I should.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I got burned a little bit this year on that. And because I had historical information in this area of bucks doing certain things, and I didn't spend enough time at the beginning of the season really scouting some of these other areas around, not knowing that there was more hunting pressure that moved in that kind of shifted things, and it changed things. And I burned some days on hunting deer that were non-existent in that spot during daylight because it wasn't their safe zone anymore.
Yeah, and I always talk about the pressure as being the unknown variable. You don't know what it is. It changes year to year, so there's instances where there was pressure and the deer were void of that area, and you're kind of like, you don't hunt in there because guys are there, and then you end up dropping a camera. I send my buddy in there. Oh, I've seen all kind of bucks, and it's like, any sign of guys? No, ain't nobody in there. You know, so it just might be year to year to you gotta you know, keep up with the hunt pressure.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, a whole another aspect besides finding the deer sign and maybe on private land and knowing what's a good spot. You got to keep up on that, where the hunters are, and help you. Like I said, there's times when I find good sign and, you know, you first thing you do is start looking for, it's almost too good to be true. I'm like, there's got to be someone hunting here, or, you know, I'll just throw cameras up. I won't instantly hunt it till if I get some daylight. Okay, then there must not be anybody hunting here. This is a real McCoy. You know, they're actually coming in.
And you just made a good point. You're not always going to see hunter sign exactly, because it is kind of an unknown variable, especially with people doing more mobile hunting. You know,
yeah, like you're right.
You know, hunting from a saddle.
Don't see much.
Climbers, you can see marks and trees a little bit, but they're still not as easy to identify if you're not really looking at it that much. Or hanging hunt setups in general, like that's harder to be able to see than you know, a traditional fixed ladder stand or a hang on that's put in the tree and left there all year. So it's you know, like I ran into a guy in this place that I was hunting, and he knew I was in there. I knew he was in there. He's like, and he had stands all over. And he's like, I don't know where you're at. He's like, I can't, like, where are you hunting at? Where are your stands at? I was like, I don't have any up. And he's like, what? I was like, I tear it down all the time. So he has no idea, you know, where I'm at. And no, for if he was trying to play off pressure, he'd have no idea besides that, you know, maybe he'd find my cameras. That'd probably be the biggest, you know, indicator of that. But that's so it's funny. And when you think about it that way, it's kind of hard to know that.
Yeah, it is.
To be able to understand it. But scouting, you know, during season and stuff can help you so much with that. And another thing I want to put on, you talk about areas changing year to year, you know, the spot we scouted again here at the scouting camp, this is fresh in my mind, but last year this spot was so dynamite as far as sign, and this year we end up finding good sign, but it was not what it looked like last year. And it's like last year was an off year. Like I've struggled finding as good a sign this spring than I had the previous years in some spots, but that also doesn't mean that spot is bad. So like when you have an off year, you have hot weather during some of the sign leaving time, you know, when scrapes are the most active and rubs, you know, around that rut time period, that's where that historical sign, those older rubs that you're starting to see, some of the old licking branches that are broke, can play a role in that. I wouldn't just give up on that area.
Yeah.
It's not like it's just all of a sudden bad, but I'm also not going to be like all in on it, you know, especially if it's a newer spot. I might throw some cameras at it and just test it, and see. But there's not exactly like a rule book exactly on that. It's just a lot of testing and being able to, and that's why I have so many areas that I have scouted and have in my, you know, hunt plan as far as places to that I can go to and hunt, because those variables change, and sometimes they change so much that the area isn't worth hunting that year anymore. Yeah. And areas
you want to get some odds in your favor, so you're going to move on. And it gets down to a certain percentage. We don't exactly know. My odds are low here. Let's move to another.
Yeah, you brought up something. It came to my head that was so good when you were talking about, we were talking about confidence when you're going into spots and setups, and how when you're in the season, you can get in your own head when things aren't going your way and you start thinking negatively. But if you can like subjectively think of these things and write a pros and cons list, basically, or positive and negatives.
Yeah.
And you were saying, keep it simple. When the negatives outweigh the positives, maybe it's time to move on. Mm-hmm. But you have to kind of like take your emotions to ground zero and think of it.
And be honest with yourself and the situation you're in.
Yes.
You know, I'm not so good that I don't spook the deer or I don't mess this. John, did you think, okay, like in that situation where I jumped that buck before light, okay, that was a big one. That's a big negative con, you know, that. But yeah, so I think right there I was decided I need to transition a little further. But yeah. You can get it. You can get, like I talked about, how you do all your scouting. You put all your time in. I'm in the right spot. This is where I need to be hunting this year or this time of year. And you sit there and day goes by. You don't see them. And then you start, the pessimism by human nature comes into your head. Maybe I messed this. You start putting things out there for giving yourself answers why you're not seeing deer. You know what I mean? But then also look at it as the positives, you know, I'm not seeing deer for A, B, or C, but then I still have an opportunity, because then what I've looked at a lot when I'm sitting in my tree stand, and a quote I said before is like, the longer I sit here and don't see a deer brings me closer to the time I will see a deer. And that, like, okay, time just keeps, something's going to come by eventually. So
yeah,
that's a good way to see it, you know. And
so I'll give an example of this past year. And I talked about this hunt on a previous podcast, but when I, this past 2022 deer season, it was super hot, you know, things weren't the same. But the area I was hunting, there was other variables other than the weather that weren't playing in my favor. So historical data told me that this spot was good. It was a good pinch point during the rut. Well, I hunted it 3 days in a row and I didn't see a single deer. Okay. Now that's not terribly out of the realm, but now when I, you know, so you start getting down on yourself, but I started looking at the variables. I had checked some cameras. I hadn't had even a doe on camera in 3 weeks on multiple cameras in there. I'm like, that's odd. That's not typical.
Yeah, I remember talking to you this year. But
that's
a
negative. You know, okay, they added some additional logging into this area up a little bit. Are those deer going and feeding on those tops at night? Is that why they shifted? There were some more tree stands and stuff came in that were around the area. Okay, did the pressure move them to maybe a different spot in that particular location? You know, the pros were historical data told me it's there.
Yeah.
It's a good terrain funnel that comes through. There's historical sign there. Those are some pros, but those cons outweighed those pros.
Yeah, especially
it took me until middle of that day. And
I remember you said that, and you said, I got out and I left.
I got out and left, went to a different spot and killed my buck that evening. And I drove, I don't know, I drove probably 30, 35 minutes to a completely different county and hunted and killed that buck. And now that doesn't always work that exact way. But that was one of those things where I felt like I gave it enough time. But when I looked at it, it was like I realized I wasn't just being pessimistic. The things were there. The
proof was in the pudding.
The proof was in the pudding. It told me it was time to go. It was time to move and try out something differently. The sign wasn't there. Things weren't going in my favor the same way. Now, that spot did fire up about 7 to 10 days later. Again, things maybe people were hunting a lot that first week in November and some things had changed. But anyways, all of a sudden, does are back on my camera and I had rutting activity like crazy later on than it normally was. So, you know, That's a spot, again, where say I didn't fill my tag that day and I was still able to hunt. That might be something I go back in a week and check it out, you know, because I know it's good, but it wasn't at that time. Maybe I go check it out and do a scout through there, a quick scout on the ground. Maybe I have my bow with me or whatever and get in there, check it out, and maybe that situation is different. But at that time, it's like you're wasting time being here with the current situation and the cards that you're dealt.
So what you were saying about last year when you got down and moved, the cons outweighed the pros, the negatives. And,
yeah.
And that's another scenario that I will go at nighttime and check other cameras in other areas just to see, because your rut or your time, your hunt might be short, 3-4 days. And you want to make the best of it, and maybe your negatives outweigh your positives. I'll get down. I'll start thinking in my head, maybe I'll sit it out the rest of the day. Tonight, I'm going to go pull cameras, and that's like, then you can get hot, like fresh intel.
Yeah.
You know, and then maybe make a new plan for the next day.
And I know one thing that you said too about that, when you're talking about checking cameras at night and, you know, making the most of the time that you have. But there's also a situation, and you brought it up in the scouting camp today, and I was like, man, you explained that extremely well, where you're talking about when, you know, you can only sprint 40 yards sort of deal. So like when you're hunting, like during the rut, there's a thing about putting time in, and there's a thing about putting
a
quality time in when you're effective. I learned this even up in Alberta when I was hunting with Jim Hole. He wouldn't put anybody in all day sits because he said you can't be alert that whole time in that cold, really cold weather. Now, I'm a fan of all day sits, but what you articulated about was like, okay, maybe I can do 3 to 4 hard days in a row, and maybe just a morning to sleep in break or something that recharges those batteries a little bit, because you're down at the low battery mark. And you're moving a little slower, you're not as alert, and you can miss opportunities or mess up opportunities based on that. So, for example, like if you were to go in and spend 3 hours at 9, 10 o'clock at night going and checking these cameras, maybe that next morning you sleep in a little bit and catch up on some rest and then get full bore into it. But you have that fresh intel. Is that kind of what you'll do, those types of things?
Yeah, or I know in the past it was going to a different state, and that was my drive to another area that I got to reach. And then when you get there, you're pulling cameras. So it's like not usually at night or the next morning, and you just want to see a little bit. So then it was like, oh, I got a fresh start, a new place, and I had time. But yeah, what I explained in there is like volume and intensity kind of go hand in hand, where you can't have intensity at a large quantity. It just takes a lot out of you when you're hunting to get into your spot and not, you know, mess up, get up early, make sure your scent's right, make sure you put your stand up right, make sure the wind's, you know, it takes a lot. And then we talk about hunting near a creek to where you have to be, a deer will sneak up on you, going to be like the whole day. It's not, you're on alert. And sometimes I get into a place where just I need crunchy leaves so I can just hear them coming. And I can kind of relax a little bit, but to be intense and on your A game. And when you're hunting these tough mountain deer, you'll get run down trying to, like, I feel like you got to do everything, because they don't take chances with their life, man. They that's how they're survivors, and they have a lot in their favor, and they don't take chances. So to capitalize on them, you have to be in a right spot, get the wind right, you know, be ready, be alert. And it might be getting in before light, staying late, you know, just all these things that take a toll on you mentally and physically. And that's why I like the challenge of hunting these public land or mountain bucks. It's both mentally and physically. It's really a great challenge. And people that are good at it are tough and work hard. You got to work hard, have a good work ethic. And it's the qualities that I feel like I have, you know, and other I can associate to other people that are in the same boat, you know what I mean? And doing the same thing. Yeah. So.
No, you're spot on. And the volume intensity thing, I mean, that comes the same thing with training your body, like working out and stuff. Like my trainer, Todd Baumgartner, Human Predator Pack Mule, I've had him on the podcast before. He talks about that a lot. He's like, you can do these, you know, workout programs that are intense, and your body kind of shuts down. You start getting injured and you start having problems.
Yeah, you're right.
And, you know, and he's like, you know, building that, you know, volume up and having that intensity when you need it, but like knowing when your body needs to recover and make sure you get that good amount of recovery to be able to continually build and do better with it. And I think that translates over to hunting quite a bit. And, you know, I feel like, a lot, like I've done it where I've done 7-8 days straight of all day sits and going super hard, and honestly I feel like my effectiveness is so low. Yeah. At those times I found my sweet spot is that 3-4 day window that I can do that, and I need a couple days. Sometimes it might not be that long, and if you're on like an out-of-state trip, I'm not going to take 2 days off to do that. But if I'm you know what I mean, like,
yeah,
but
I know what you mean.
If I'm hunting in Pennsylvania and I'm going to pick the best days, I'm look at Spartan Forge prediction, I'm look at the weather, I'm going to do that. I'm going to hunt a good 3 days and I need to catch up on some work. I might do that the next couple days and then go back out and hunt again. If you're using vacation time to do that in your home state, when you're on an out-of-state trip, a little different. You have a little bit more condensed time. You need to make the most of it, but you can still find those recharge areas. It just might not be as long, you know, to be able to do that. Or maybe recharging even means just not sitting in a tree. It just means scouting a different spot.
Yeah, and I like I say, when you say about the working out, grow while you rest, kind of the same applies to this. Recharge and grow, recharge your batteries while you're resting. And sometimes for me, it's just a mental thing to where instead of getting up at 4 a.m., I'll get up at 7, and it's daylight, and it's a mental, like, I get mad at myself. You should be in it, like work something in my brain, like kind of get mad at him. You should have been out, you know? And it's like, sometimes, all right, I'm going, I got to go. You know, it's something like that. Just work with your brain a little bit, kind of trick it a little bit into, it might not be like you said, I'm more up taking 4 days off.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not that. It's just something, what works for you, whether it's sleeping in or coming out. Okay, I'll hunt the morning. I'm going to come out and take a nap this afternoon. Or like, you know, you get in a rut. A lot of the times, the good time of the day is 10 to 2. All right, well, I'm just going to sleep in and hunt 10 to 2. Sometimes it's just that helps you, you know. So, yeah, that's really important. Then you start making mistakes when you're going and pushing yourself.
Yeah. No, it definitely is. And going back, like, on the scouting side of things, and when you're doing that, I mean, I think that volume comes down to the scouting portion, like putting as much time as you can scouting versus the actual hunting. And I feel like you'll have better hunts when you're putting in that scouting time. And also, you know, something that I know all of us do, you know, all of us scout and hunt differently that we're at this camp.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that we all do is when we find a particular sign, and that sign doesn't need to be the biggest scrape. It doesn't need to be the biggest rub. Whatever it is that trips our trigger, that's like, okay, this is good. It might even be this little cover, this small, you know, little transition where it goes from really steep, a small little bench that comes out, a little knob or something. Wherever we find a spot that we want to hunt or sign that, like, gives us that thing that feels good, we spend a bunch of time sitting there looking at it, walking around it, looking at it from different perspectives and trying to understand the why behind it and what's going on. And that's where you're like just taking that time instead of like trying to cover the most ground when you're scouting, is like spending quality time in some of those places areas that matter. Mm-hmm. You know, moving quickly through areas that don't matter.
And then slow down when you get to that.
And slow down.
Really dissect an area that's really important.
It'll take me, if I find a spot that I think I want to set up, sometimes it takes me 30 to 60 minutes to pick a tree.
Oh yeah.
30 to now when you're like running gunning and you find stuff, you don't really have that amount of time like during the hunting season or focusing it, but like right now in the spring, that's a perfect time to spend as much time as you mm-hmm. possibly can figuring that out, cuz there's so many scenarios. It's super difficult to make that decision on the fly, or just be like, I know for me, I've always been like, I'd scout, and I'd be running, I'd find a good sign, I'd mark it, make a waypoint, and I go. And then I get home and I'm like, I never picked a tree.
Yeah, you don't pick a tree, or like, I should. And then I've replayed in visually in my head what I saw. I'm like, I should have went up on that next little spot to check that, or I should have dropped down. I should have, and maybe he's, you know, going to, around that point, or I should have checked this, you know. And yeah, definitely stay in that zone, in that area, and really dissect it and know. Like, I almost want to have a visual picture, you know. And when there's blank spots in there, I don't like that. Like,
no.
Even though I got my maps and that, I want to visually run myself through that area I was and know, okay, he could be up there, up the hill near that point, or this and that. And like, I know what's all there to help me, you know, because I slowed down and I took it all in, you know, and help myself find.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, Greg talked about that. Greg Litzinger, a spot that him and my dad Mason found, and I was in this spot, so I know what they're talking about. There was an area where, you know, up on top, you get this clear cut, and in this particular scenario, you also had a food plot in the area. But if you just even take that food plot out, that clear cut kind of acts as a food plot with a bunch of briars and stuff. And say there's just a food source on top, whether it's mm-hmm. oaks, clear cut, whatever. And there's a rub line that ran down off of the hill. You know, there's a big rub right on the edge of the food source. It started going down off of the hill. It's like, you know, where you got to your normal spot, you'd think a buck would bed. There wasn't really bedding there, and it kept going down lower. And Greg was like, all right, in this situation, the food's up top. You know, then found some doe bedding. It's like the buck's probably bedding a little lower than you think. And in that particular situation, it's like, let's follow that sign down and spend time weaving back and forth mm-hmm. and find, you know, where they're spending that time at. And I think adapting on the fly when you're scouting too, like you can have really good laid plans, you know, through e-scouting and finding these locations. But when you get in there, it's important to know when to adapt and spend more time in an area or moving back and forth and looking for those little things that make it like, okay, I think a buck's living here. I think a buck's running here, a buck's traveling here, and having that particular time of year in mind of when this sign is being made.
Yeah.
There's a lot that goes into your thought process for it. And for guys like us, it takes a lot of asking why.
Yeah. And I always talk about no, 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 K-N-O-W, no, no more, know where this is, no, Know as much as you can. Know where they bed. Know this. Know, because he's doing the same thing that mature deer. He's knowing all that stuff, and that's why he's successful with living, because he knows where the pressures, he knows where the does are. He knows where the food is. He knows where the, you know, car, he knows all this stuff, but he lives there every day, and we don't, we're not in the woods every day, so you need to get closer to their level of putting time in, quality time, and knowing this, and asking why. I ask myself a million, how come, and then I keep going and knowing more till I can answer my questions, but it's know where the deer, no, don't just stop because you've seen good sign. Probe around, know where the guys are hunting, know where they enter, know what the preferred food source is, you know where the, like, it's just knowing, you just got to be like a sponge and soak it up and know all you can. And that's the more you know, and it takes years, then that's why I always, people say, you're kind of like a deer. I said, well, I kind of know the area like they do, and I learn from them and sense what makes them comfortable, what they need, what they don't like, where are they going to be safe, how do they, and I get to feel when I could feel a buck would walk, like I could feel what he needs when he's traveling, maybe ground that's uneven, or just a little bit of briar or something where he could sneak, or just a lot of times, like yesterday, or I grabbed the camera before I got up here, and there was fairly open area, and it was just this little soft ridge with just some thick bloat out, like I could sense him, feel him using that, just because he feels, knowing that's what he likes to have when he's traveling, some cover. But it's just being in the woods, and I told a lot of these guys, spend as much time as you can in the woods, and learn not only from people, learn from the animals that you're hunting. That's your best teacher, really. You know what I mean? Is them. And ask yourself questions, like you said, why and when or whatever, but they could tell you a lot,
Yeah, no, they most definitely can. And I also want to say, like, for guys that are out there and you're trying to figure out these things, and you just think, I can't see it the same way you guys are. I'm not putting all these pictures of the puzzle together. It takes time, yeah. And just spend as much time, starting small. And even if you get one piece of the puzzle together while you're out there on day scouting, that's one step closer than you were before. Mm-hmm. And you just, it's going to take time and experience to understand these things and understand, like, okay, this is where a mature buck would feel safe. Like that is something that I can't sit here and describe every scenario on what that is. I have my own experiences that I've seen this, and I apply that to other areas, and then every area I go to, I learn a little more, and I can take that information and apply it to somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly. It's relative to another situation.
Yeah, but it takes time, and and I say this because I'm learning it from now 2 years of doing this camp. Of some of those same things are coming up. Mm-hmm. I'm struggling to, when I get in the woods, I feel overwhelmed, or I feel confused on what this is. Just try to slow down and ask yourself why on some of these things. And you're probably going to be wrong more than you're right, but that's okay, because you will figure out more as you go. And the more experience you put in, now you've been hunting, an area, or just hunting a specific style, like the big woods or the mountains, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. Now you're way further ahead than you were at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a lifelong process versus, just having an end goal for it. There's no end goal with this,
You just keep growing.
You keep growing.
And an analogy that I use a lot, this is how people can kind of take this analogy and see how the whole hunting deer picture is, chasing mature deer. It's like, so we do talk about the pieces of the puzzle. So, I get pieces of the puzzle, but I don't know what the big picture is. Say it's the puzzle you're building is a Christmas tree. So I got like some green, like I don't know what I don't know. It's like you building a puzzle, but not looking at the box and seeing what the picture is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like I don't know. And that would be you harvesting that animal, knowing everything about them and killing them. It's like, that's the picture. That's what you're trying to achieve, is get enough pieces of the puzzle. Then you start seeing that picture. But a lot of times I got pieces of the puzzle, but I don't know what I don't know what the end result, you know, I don't know what the picture is. Like, I don't know everything. I have pieces and I keep putting them together and learning. I got a chunk here, you know, and then I got a chunk here, and I don't know, like, to me in my head, cause if it, I knew everything, every time I got it, I'd shoot a deer, but there's a lot you don't know. So you keep getting these puzzles and starting to hopefully visualize that picture. That your end result is see the picture on the box. Okay. I got it. You know, this was, but it's just keep gaining pieces and pieces. Cause you know, I think about maybe a deer that I'm hunting or an area I'm hunting. There's like missing. It's like that puzzle. You're putting the pieces in, but all this is missing. You don't know all that. You're trying to fill all them pieces in, and that's what you just keep going and going and getting a little piece here, and you keep putting them in there, and then hopefully you get enough. It's almost like I guess the Wheel of Fortune. You get letters, and you don't know what the answer. You know, it's like, can I get a, you know, Pat, can I get a J or what? You know, and you finally get some letters, and then you're like, I'll solve the puzzle. You know what I mean? And that's, it's like, I got it. But the initial start of it is just, you know, just like the Wheel of Fortune. You know, can I get a P? Yeah, there's two P's. You're like, yes. You know what I mean? Which is like, yeah, I found a couple scrapes. It's like, all right, man, I can put them up on a board, you know, that, yeah. So,
that's such a good analogy. But kind of wrapping this up, one thing I learned is like last year, I had a bunch of guys had been reaching out to me that are like, you know, a lot of them are like, I don't have a ton of time to put in this. I want a little bit of help, or I want to see some of this in person, like understanding how you're looking at it, John, or how I'm looking at it, or even looking at maps of their particular area. And I started helping out some guys. I hadn't advertised it, but like from an e-scouting perspective and like a consulting aspect of it, basically, and going through it. And basically what I was doing was like, you know, having a call with them, kind of understanding what the process was as far as like, what's their experience in the area? What were they seeing? Kind of understanding that. And then I'd look at the map, mark up places I want, and then have a call with them, like a Zoom call, and go through and try to help them understand it and see it and learn, you know, helping mark points for them, but also teaching them the process at the same time. And recently you're starting to help people with that, you know, from an e-scouting perspective. And, you know, you've had so much experience and you're like, I want to help others to be able to learn how to do that, you know, whether that's e-scouting or even in the field scouting and being able to see that and almost be like a coach.
Yeah, exactly.
To be able to help with that. So you want to talk a little bit more about what you're kind of doing there?
Yeah. So all the years experience being in a lot of different states, I come to the conclusion, it's like, I could be helping people. I have helped people just message me, but it got to the point where I can't help everybody. And my time is valuable, you know? So, but the biggest thing is help. I want to help others, from all my experience. I want to give them what I've learned and not have them maybe take 20 years to get to where I am. Maybe I could help them along, speed the process up. So, and then it hit me when we were on a trip in Alabama this year. I think we take I don't want to say for granted. We know a lot, but we are still learning. We don't, like I said, the more I learn, the more I want to learn more, and I feel like I don't know. But I think I'm so far down the road compared to the average guy getting into hunting, because I spent all that time out there. But I forget where I was going. But I have started helping people, e-scouting, dropping pins. And because there was definitely a need for it, just over the years, people contact me. But I'm going to do more. I want to do more to help people. And like I said, my time is valuable. So yeah, lately I have been helping a few guys. I drop pins for them, just e-scouting, and send them out, and they check the areas, check the pins, and they come back. And it could be like evolving to where, like you said, I can go out and in the field and hike with them, maybe an area that because I feel like when you're e-scouting, there's a lot missing. Boots on the ground is really a big thing, and you could see more just being out there. But yeah, so I have been helping people scout, dropping pins, and after this camp, I've had people come up to me, and like you said, it's like people are willing to pay for your time to help them, you know. So and I'm going to keep doing, like, I've been busy with my excavation business here the last couple of months, but I'm getting freed up, and I'm going to start like I talked to you, Bo, about, hey, let's talk about it maybe on a podcast or something and get it out there, and because I'm having people contact me now to where, you know, it's kind of working out, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and you want to work with people that want to learn and want to, you know, be able to elevate that. You think about it, like, anything I want to learn, the fast track to doing that is essentially trying to learn from somebody else that's done it, that's mm-hmm. done these things, and that you can learn from. And through the years, I've paid for services to have, or not even, I don't know if you want to call them services, but I've paid to have access to people that have done it.
Yeah.
And to try to learn from them to be able to apply it in my own scenario. And I think that's a really good, you know, thing. You know, one of the guys that was here, I had helped him out with e-scouting. We did a consulting thing. And then he came to the camp to add another aspect to it, to get to spend time with all of us in person. And be able to elevate, and, you know, just talking to him, he was like, man, I'm, you know, some of the sign that he was finding, and there was a couple of people here that had helped out with consulting before, and it helped out. And I think someone like you that has had such experience in not only Big Woods, but farm country.
Yeah, that, and different habitats.
And stuff, so many different habitats all over the country. You have this, all this information, and being able to help someone else. So if someone were to, like, want to talk to you about it and see if it was the right fit, like, what should, how should they contact you?
So you can just if you can message me on Instagram or email me Stuart14967@gmail.com if you want to shoot me, you know, an email, and we can get something going. In every situation, I don't want to say what it costs them, but it depends on what you're wanting to do. But what I was wanting to say before I lost my train of thought is that we take so much for granted of what we know, because we're around guys that are doing this, you know, and we're learning a little bit. But, you know, in the recent veteran hunts Bill had, I was able to get with in the woods with people that are more novice. And I really, like, they're like blown away in what they learn in the day or two in the woods. And they all, and this is another thing that triggered me to help people, is like, I learned more with you in these 2 days than I would learn in 2 years. And the gears started turning in my head. I'm like, wow, this could be definitely a business venture for me to just help people, because I love helping people. And if I had enough money and I was rich, I'd help everybody for free, but that ain't the case. You know, your time is valuable. But the recent hunt we had in Alabama, I went to an area that I'd never been before, but like you said, being in different parts of the country, and I seen right away where the doe population was, where the deer, you know, and I just, things started clicking, and I, you know, Slade Johnson, we were on some of his property, and I just, he was wanting, you know, we had corn, we were hunting over feeders and doe and shooting hogs and stuff like that, but I'm always tuned into mature deer, and he told us where to park and hunt, and I went with Jake, a newer hunter, and we hunted, and on the, where we were parking, I just felt, it was an old homestead. I just felt like this is where a big deer, there's some mature trees there, some oak trees, an old grown up homestead. I'm like, this is where I would hunt for a mature deer, you know? And we're in the rest, and they're usually loners. The rest of the population is the doe and the yearlings, a lot of deer. And that's where we were going to try to harvest some of these does and stuff. But on the way out, the one day, 11 o'clock, we were getting back to the vehicle, going back toward this homestead, and we're almost like to this old homestead where we were parked and along the road, And I just could, I said, Jake, get ready. He said, what do you mean? I said, no, this is where a big buck. And you start your sixth sense, your senses get really in tune with where you're at and all your experience. I said, no, this is where a big buck's going to be right here. And like he knocked an arrow and we walked. I'm like, hold up. There he is. Right. And he was standing right there. And he caught us. And Jake was blown away. How did you know that? I sensed like this is, I feel like this is what a deer needs. This is a buck, like, and that's what I say about putting all the time in the woods and learning and like almost becoming that animal and knowing what you need to survive and get old. So I start sensing what they need, and I'm in an area like this is an area for big deer. So he was blown away, and I'm just like, and I talked to Slade. I said, he said, yeah, I hunted that property. I said, man, you got to be up near that homestead. There's a big deer. He said, yeah, I hunted down in a barn 1 year, years ago. There was a big deer there. He said, guess where I found a shed? I said, where? He said, right in the yard at a homestead. He's living. I was like, yeah. But it was like, I was there one time, studied a little bit of e-scout, and I went in, and it's like, man, and it made me feel good to go into a different area. And like, man, I knew right away, like this, and people, I don't know, have that sense maybe, or... I like I said, when I was younger, I didn't learn, like I quit reading magazines and stuff like that, and it didn't really pertain to where I hunted. So I just would learn from the animals themselves and spend all that time in the woods and see what they want. So that's where my wheels started spinning even more and getting into this year. And I talked about it on another podcast, and I had a couple guys contact me, and so yeah, I've been doing some e-scouting, dropping pins, and they're just ecstatic. And I think, you know, when you're passionate about something like that, money's not, you're going to hunt and you want to, jump in leaps and bounds. And I feel like I could help people in that way for a price tag, whatever it might be. But if it would take 10 years to learn this stuff, if we could speed up this process to, you know, and in 10 years, what's going to cost you to go to these different states due to scouting. So yeah. Yeah, shoot me a message on the Johnny Stewart on Instagram, or like I said, shoot me an email, and we could talk. Like I've been having like a 10-minute consultation. What do you want? What do you need? What are you wanting to do? It usually starts with some e-scouting, pin dropping, but then we can get more in depth. Where I mean, that's really like bottom of the barrel. Like what I would do for a price tag is just drop some pins and. And I would describe them a little bit to a certain degree and go about your way with it. We can get more in depth to where I have you go to these areas, take pictures and send them to me because, you know, like e-scouting, you can't see all the cover. There's a lot of factors, but then we can get into like, okay, where's access? You know, where are people coming in? Where, you know, there's like a kind of a list in my head that I think I'm going to end up writing up a list of what I want to boom shoot at you, you know, boom. It's something when we start talking, and I think as I do more of it, I'm going to have this. I thought about, I'm going to have a list. I'm going to shoot you off these five things that I need to know from you, you know, right. But it's not, it might not pertain to every situation. Cause like we said earlier, and another thing that I feel like it helped being in a bunch of different states and learning a lot is like, there are no two situations alike. They're all different. You know, similarities do come into play, but nothing is identical. There's no two pieces of land. You know, it's just to where I feel like me having experience, I could help people and jump in leaps and bounds this way.
Yeah, and you were saying that you wanted to, like, ideally it would be like a scenario where you'd continue to work with this person, like start with the dropping pins. Maybe, you know, maybe you don't even go visit the property, but they go in, they find stuff, they schedule another call with you talking about what they found, and okay, maybe you adjust some way. You're looking at a map based on what they found, helping them through it, and even coming down to the season when they're struggling and going through, like, oh, hey, maybe you can think about, you know, trying this or going down through this method. Just kind of like a coaching type session.
Yeah, being like, I feel like maybe a quarterback, you're the quarterback, I'm the coach on the sidelines, and we're going to play this game. And I think I would, like, get to the situation where okay, I'm going to coach you through the season as your coach. You're the quarterback. You're playing, and you come to the sidelines, which is you give me a call. Here, what do I need to do? Because I feel like scouting this time of year, dropping pins is one thing that I could do. But as we evolve and go through the season, if someone's, you know, like, and we talk about how we have friends that we could bounce things off of because we grew up with hunters, but there's some guys that are getting this new and they don't have people that they can call. Hey, Bo, I got this situation. What do you think I do? And almost they need that coach or someone throughout the season. So I'm thinking I might take on something to that effect to where, like, you know, in season, changing on a fly, what are you seeing? How, you know, to, I think it could really have people jump in leaps and bounds, actually see what I see and have them talk to me like, okay, I'll catch up with you. You know, it's dark at 5 during, you know, you have a few hours maybe. So that's like a scenario I'm thinking about setting up if people are interested in going that route and having me there available for them. Yes, I'm doing my own hunting, and I know other guys only, I've talked to a few guys that doing a consultant. They just want to do it in the scouting summertime because they're doing their own, their hunting season. They're doing their thing. They don't want to be bothered. But I think there's people that could really have someone pay to have someone on call to, John, I jumped this deer. Where do you think I should do it? And then if it's already, we started back in the spring or summer, and we already got a track record. And I could, it's just basically like that coach on the sideline to watch it. So like your coach on a football team, he's got a lot of experience and he can see it from, you know, and we always talk about having someone else's perspective, point of view, but I can call you, I can call other friends and go that route. But, and I think about different things, maybe get into maybe, having someone come hunt with me if they wanted to, maybe we get together. Like I'm just playing things in my head that things I would like to do is maybe, say, Bo, you're wanting a scouting, me to help you scout or man, I'd really love for you to come down and it's hike that area or hunt my area, or maybe I'll take them to one of my areas. Maybe I'll work into something like that, but it's all individually different on what someone's wanting. We'll just have to work on a price and figure out what you're comfortable with and me to make it happen. But I think I'd like to, as I took people out for these veteran hunts, I'd like to get into that, like taking people out or hunting with them throughout the year, hunt together. And like even a couple of the guys I've been doing some scouting for, come on down. I said, well, maybe I'll come down and hunt with you and, you know, a day with me. Like I learned from them guys and veterans. I'm just like, man, I can't believe it. But I'm like humble. I don't stick my, like I know everything because I don't, you know, but I feel like other people looking at me like, wow, I can't believe what you know to where this could definitely benefit them. So there's a lot of things I'm playing around with in my head. Different ways of helping people, but yeah, if yeah. Someone's interested in it, yeah, get a hold of me and we'll go from there. Just, you know, have like a little consultation, a couple of minutes on the phone and see what we can come up with, you know. And like you said, a couple of guys here contacted me, give me your number. I want to maybe get into some consulting. And like you said, some of these guys are traveling 2-3 hours and, you know, when you get out there and you want to know, but they don't have the time. And they're green and not knowing a lot about it, like where something I could really have them jump in leaps and bounds and help them find that animal.
Yeah, no, and then eventually be able to, you know, kick the bird out of the nest sort of deal, and like they're
yeah, you're right, yeah,
on their own. That's the end goal with it. But no, I think that's pretty awesome, and
to me it makes so much sense. Like the time I've spent, if I could be around someone that knew what I knew when I was younger and talked to them, I could probably get further ahead. And I know, to me, you're young yet, Bo, but you're jumping because almost you're getting, when you do these podcasts, you're talking to, you get all these different aspects from other people. And, you know, I look up to you and what you know, cause with all the people you've had to be around in this career field that you're in now and being with your dad, it's like, it's kind of the same deal. You can really get further ahead, you know, in these scenarios.
Yeah, no, definitely. Well, John, I appreciate you coming on and talking and helping out with the scouting camp.
Oh, yeah.
Again, it was a phenomenal time, and I look forward to planning the next one and continuing to evolve this and make it better and just be able to have, you know, good times with good people with similar interests.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me, Bo, and I think we're both on the same page. We want to help people. And yeah, like you said, we even after the camp, we all got together and had some different ideas on how we could make it better and, you know, other avenues that we could go down, you know.
Definitely. Cool. Well, I guess we'll talk to you later. And thanks, everyone, for listening. We will talk to you soon.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of East Meets West Hunt with your host, Bo Martonic. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit eastmeetswesthunt.com, Facebook at East Meets West Outdoors, and Instagram at East Meets West Hunt. If you enjoyed today's episode, please review and subscribe, and we'll catch you next time.